It's Friday, the 1st of January, 2016. Happy birthday to Larry Nance and Tiago Splitter. And welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by moneyball.com.au and Shermola. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast, just like Shermola, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes. It is extremely helpful for the show, and it's helpful for me. I love reading what you guys have to say about it. So thank you to everyone who's done this. And if you want to add one little amendment to your New Year's resolutions, just put that on. Leave a review for Red Rock Fantasy Basketball. That would be much appreciated. Hope you all had a very safe New Year's. I hope you all had a prosperous New Year and had an enjoyable start to this New Year. If it has started, I know you guys in on the west coast of the US, it's not quite midnight yet, so you're still waiting for that to tick over. And I know that because I'm joined by someone from the west coast of the US for today's podcast. I'm joined by Seth Klein. Seth, how are you?
I'm good. I'm staying in tonight. Joining you for my New Year's. I think I'll be crossing over into 2016 as we're on there.
Yes, you will. So I'll see if I can keep an eye on that now and wish you Happy New Year as it goes down. We're about an hour away from that happening at the moment. Seth, you find Seth's work on Razzball. He writes at The Fantasy Fix. He does some DFS stuff at Fantasy Draft and, of course, All Star 5 as well. Seth, just give everyone a reminder where they can find you on Twitter, please.
You can find me at Seth Da Sportsman, SethDaSportsman. I'm on there all the time. I'm the fancy vampire. I don't go to sleep. I'm up all kinds of hours answering your questions. I wake up in my sleep and answer your questions without even knowing. But yeah, follow me on there. I answer all the questions you have, and I like to have fun.
I hope we all do. I hope we all like to have fun, Seth. There was something I was just going to ask
like
you.
I like the party.
Of course. There was something I was just going to ask you, and I can't remember what it was. I'm sure it'll come back to me later. We'll get to that a bit later on. Seth, we've got NBA action to talk about from New Year's Eve. We've got NBA action to preview for New Year's Day. So,
let's get to it.
Seth, the monstrous line of the night for tonight. I went with Russell Westbrook as my player of the day. He was fantastic yet again. 36 points for Westbrook, a 3, a rebound, 12 assists, 5 steals, and a block. Super efficient as well. Hit all 11 of his free throws, went 12 of 19 from the field. I think a lot of people were a bit concerned about Westbrook heading into this season, that, you know, the return of KD was going to mute his production. I think those concerns they've turned out to be definitely unfounded. He's the second-ranked player in 8 category leagues this season, ahead of Anthony Davis, just behind Steph Curry, ahead of KD, ahead of James Harden. He's taken his game to another level, even with the return of KD. Before I get your thoughts on Russell Westbrook, I named this podcast Sons of the Westbrook. Not many people will know what that means, but Seth, I want to play something for you, because the reason I named it that is because my team in the Australian Football League, for you guys listening in Australia, you know what I'm talking about. It's the Western Bulldogs, and our theme song, our fight song, so to speak, is called Sons of the West. So I use that for a pun, and I'm going to play that song for you now. I want to just a bit, and I want to hear your opinion on it. Give me one sec. And there you go. So that was just me, a massive crowbar to use that as a podcast title. What'd you think of that song? Whenever our team runs out into the field each week, that's the song we run out to. Inspiring?
I like that. I like it. I like that more than some of the pop music that the teams run out to in this country. So yeah, I could see the team getting pumped up for that.
Yeah, that's our theme song. I'm sure many of you especially in Melbourne will know that song and probably dislike it, but that's my song. I needed to crowbar it into a title. I've done. The explanation's done. What's your take on Westbrook being this season? He's been impressive, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's really been impressive. The shooting percentage is way up. You know, it's just he's doing everything out there. And like you said, the return of Durant is not really impacting him. I mean, sure, he's not going to get 13 triple doubles, I think he had last year, but who cares? You're not, hopefully you're not a league that counts triple doubles, but he's just getting better. Like you said, he's explosive and he's healthy, and he's really healthy for the first time, like we've seen in a prolonged period, because he did have those lower body issues a couple years ago. He's just fun to watch, and man, the guy can just dunk, and he just drives through the lane, and he's passing the ball as well as anyone in the league right now. Just fun guy to watch, and fun team to watch. It will really be interesting to see what happens this offseason with Durant hitting free agency, and if you know, they decide to stick together and try to win a championship if they don't this year, and or if Durant goes somewhere and wants to be the main guy, because I do feel that despite them both, I think, being really good teammates and unselfish players, I think they both sort of want to be the man on that team. And it can be tough to share that load to be a superstar and not be the only superstar on the team.
Yeah, like I agree with all of that. It's going to be really interesting to see how it goes. But in terms of this season, Westbrook is almost at a double-digit assist guy per game. He's at 9.4 assists per game. Rebounds are right up there. Massive steal numbers. He's just putting in just tremendous, tremendous numbers basically in every category. He's doing it all for you. Seth, did you have someone else that you were going to give the monstrous line of the night to?
Yeah, I did. I actually gave it to Draymond Green. He speaking of triple-doubles, he put up a triple-double, 10 points, 11 rebounds, 16 assists. They also chipped in two steals, two blocks, and a three-pointer. It's Stephen Curry's MVP to lose, but Draymond Green is in that MVP conversation. It's his fifth triple-double of the season, and actually that ties for the lead with Rajon Rondo in the NBA. If he gets one more triple-double this year, he'll tie Kevin Garnett and Charles Barkley with six. As non-guards to get a triple-double. Kevin Garnett, Charles Barkley, and Larry Bird are the only other players with six or more triple-doubles in a season for non-guards. So with one more triple-double, he'll tie Garnett, he'll tie Barkley for six in a season, and only person ahead of him will be Larry Bird. He had 10, actually, twice, which is incredible. Yeah, those seasons Larry Bird had were just unreal. But to me, that, you know, this is a second-round draft pick for the Warriors. Yep. He was drafted in the second round, 2012, I believe. Really didn't get playing time right away. He got an opportunity in the playoffs. I think it was Barnes that got hurt, Harrison Barnes, that may have gotten hurt and Bogut.
It was Lee that got hurt. It was Lee that got hurt, and they put Barnes at the four, and then they put Green at there some more. Yeah.
But yeah, and he was sort of the perimeter defender guy, and now he's just turned his game into this. He's a superstar right now. He's a top 10 player in the NBA.
Yeah, he's all NBA first team in line for it at the moment.
Yeah, I agree, and it's just fun to watch. Fun to watch a guy that plays his position pass the ball so well. It's reminiscent of Bird and reminiscent of those guys, and sort of, well, Magic Johnson did that. I mean, he was a guard, but he was the same size as Green is. So to watch a player do that's very similar to what Magic was doing in the 80s. And it's just fun to watch. And he's not going to win the MVP, but no. Putting up major, major fantasy stats.
Yeah, he's been incredible, and he seems to get better. And we know how good he was last year, and he's taken it to another level this year, which seems counterintuitive for a guy who was that good and then earned a big contract, and he's taken it up another notch. He's a relentless hard worker. He's been fantastic. The waiver wire line of the night, to me, that's the same guy as the young gun of the night, and that is TJ Warren of the Phoenix Suns. He was awesome. He played 41 minutes. He had 29 points, a career high. He shot 11 of 17 from the field. He hit three threes, had 9 rebounds, 3 assists, and 4 steals. Hit all 4 of his free throws as well. He played 41 minutes. PJ Tucker played 42 minutes, and Devin Booker played 39 minutes. So all these guys we thought were going to be competing for Eric Bledsoe's minutes basically all played the entire game each. It was a very weird situation as Phoenix continues to change their starting lineup every single game, basically. he worked well alongside PJ Tucker in the starting lineup. What do you make of Warren? He's a guy that last season, he legitimately, not legitimately, he actually hit 5 threes for the entire season. He's hit 7, I think, in the last 2 games combined. Is he actually a three-point shooter now? He's a 43% three-point shooter this year. That's obviously way up on the 24% he shot last season. He's always projected as a guy who's going to have a really good field goal percentage. He's going to score a lot, but he's adding things at the moment, especially recently. He's getting steals, he's hitting threes, and he's giving you some decent rebounds. He should be owned in all leagues, correct?
Yeah, I think he should be owned in all leagues. And actually, you mentioned PJ Tucker. I think he should also...
I agree with that.
I'm not really necessarily adding. The one thing he was supposed to bring to the table was the three-pointers, and he actually hasn't hit a single three-pointer since Bledsoe got hurt. He's raw. He's young. He's going to be a good player in the league, but he doesn't bring enough to the table. I like Tucker the best of the three. Yep. I think that because he is tasked to guarding guys like LeBron, or he'll guard Kevin Durant. You saw how poorly Durant played tonight. He'll be out on the floor. He'll be playing 40 minutes a game. And last year, you know, he only played, I think last year, 30 minutes a game, but he put up just around top 100 value. I think he was 103rd. In 9 category leagues. He can hit threes, he can steal the ball, he's going to get rebounds, and now he's going to get even more opportunity. I think he's the guy, but yeah, Warren should be owned. I'm not buying the 7 3-pointers. I think it's 8 3-pointers in his last 3 games.
No, I'm not buying that either.
Yeah, but he's going to score, like you said. And look, and like last game, he's going to have bad games. That team is a bad basketball team right now. They've lost sort of their identity with Bledsoe going out. They have this behind the scenes stuff with Markieff Morris. Hornacek's on the hot seat. I think you're going to see them start trading guys, possibly even Tyson Chandler buyout. Who knows? But I think that this is a team that's going to be losing a lot of basketball games. I think they played with some fire tonight. But if you look at last game, I think Warren only had 11 points. So if you're going to add these guys, you're going to have to expect that they're going to have games like that. And the reason I do like Tucker a little bit more is because even if he isn't scoring, he's still going to get you a couple steals. He's going to get you a couple threes. And I don't think that you're going to get that out of Warren every game. But certainly a great game from him and fun to see, because I know a lot of us, I think you included and myself, really liked him coming to the season. And, you know, he started off just really not getting the minutes, and then he got hot and you added him, and he got cold and you dropped him. But it's going to be fun to watch these young guys play. Hopefully they get Alex Len some time as well.
Yeah, well, that's the next one. Who knows with Phoenix? Everything's going to change basically every single game. And you're right, he didn't do much in the previous game. Warren, he played 40 minutes here, but this was without Markieff Morris getting onto the court at all. And John Lua was out as well. So they just went extremely small. They played Devin Booker, PJ Tucker, and TJ Warren as the starting 2, 3, and 4. So that's how small they went in this game. And this is against a team who's not that small. Like OKC's running out Kanter, Steven Adams, and Serge Ibaka. Predictably, they lost. So Hornacek's just going to continue to change things every game. But Warren and Tucker were in agreement. They should be owned everywhere. Did you have anyone else that you looked at for your waiver wire line of the night?
No, I agreed with you with Warren. And I met, you know, I had Tucker, Rodney Hood, Trey Burke, and Andre Iguodala's honorable mentions on there, but certainly Warren was far and away above those guys. Although Trey Burke put up some pretty good numbers as well.
Trey Burke's out of his mind at the moment. He's shooting so well. I think I saw a stat somewhere that he scored 50 points in the last 6 quarters of action.
Yeah, and that's. I mean, he's getting opportunity with Alec Burks out, and Rodney Hood, same thing. He had a great game tonight, and. If the Jazz are smart, they're going to play these guys minutes. But still, Trey Burke's still coming off the bench for Raul Neto, still starting for whatever reason. I'm not sure. But those numbers are going to go down a little bit once Derek Favors is back in the lineup. Rudy Gobert is back maybe in a couple weeks, less than that. So a good pickup right now, but it's probably not something that's going to carry out throughout the season.
Correct. My dart of the night is Enes Kanter, who's still owned in 78% of leagues. He played just 14 minutes here, had 6 points and 4 rebounds. He'd played really well the two previous games. Some monster scoring games, big rebounding games, especially on the offensive glass, big percentages. And I said, Donovan's going to play him down the stretch and play him 25 minutes. He's going to get you a double-double and he's going to help your percentages. Well, Billy Donovan decided to change that in this one. Only the 14 minutes in. I think some of that's in response to the Suns going small. They still played a bark of 30 minutes and 25 for Adams, though. They could only find 14 for Enes Kanter, and the rest of those minutes were distributed to Deion Waiters. So, Kanter, what's your take on him? Is he a guy that you're holding in 12-team leagues, or he's not a must-hold, but it's on certain team builds?
He's one of those guys that I know we've talked about him the last couple of years, and I'm just not a fan of his game fantasy-wise. I do think that he helps Oklahoma City space the floor well, do that, but he's just really bad on, you know, he's not a plus defensive player, and that shows in fantasy. I think last time I looked was maybe a week, 10 days ago, I think he had like 3 blocks the whole season. So, I mean, you're talking about a 7-footer with under 5 blocks the whole season. He doesn't get steals. He's basically Zach Randolph 2 years ago. And if you want rebounds, and Zach Randolph with less rebounding, put it that way. Okay. So if you want some middle range rebounds with, you know, middle range scoring, fine, but he's really not going to offer much beyond that. It really depends how thin your waiver wire is. Sure. If, you know, a league like ours that we're in, the put up or shut up league, I mean, you look at our waiver wire, it's just atrocious. Obviously he's a guy that you're going to want to keep in that sort of a league. But if it's a 3-man bench league, to me, if there's a Hawkeye out there, if you need to win one category on a Sunday and he's the last guy to drop, then yeah, I'm fine dropping
him. Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. Anyone else that you really hated their performance tonight?
Yeah, I really hated Chris Paul's performance tonight. The assists are there, 12 assists, 5 rebounds, 2 steals, 3 of 18 from the field. That's a killer on a short day, when you're trying to make way on a Thursday, and he just kills you with the field goal percentage there. He's actually 7 for 31 over his last 2 games, and has just 2 3-pointers made over his last 5 games. So he's in a slump, folks. The assists are there, but the shooting is bad. He's clearly trying to take a lot of the burden with Blake Griffin out, trying to take on that scoring load, and it's probably going to result in some off-shooting games, but it's also going to result in some big scoring games like we saw last week where he put up some big games. But, you know, as long as the assists are there, of course, it's great, but certainly disappointing when you see Chris Paul put up a shooting night like that.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Seth, let's get into these games in that little bit more detail. I'm just going to bring up the box scores for everyone to see on the screen, which are courtesy of Basketball Monster, of course. There we go. Hope you guys can all see that. All right. Let's get into these games, Seth, and see what we can work out from the action. The first game is the Milwaukee Bucks and the Indiana Pacers. The Bucks, a really high-scoring game, actually. The Bucks got the victory here. Chris Middleton, he's absolutely on fire. 33-5-4, 4 triples, 2 steals, and a block. What do you make of what Chris Middleton's doing? It's not sustainable because he's almost a top-10 player over the last couple of weeks. Are you aggressively selling him high? Like, what do you make of this sort of out of nowhere performance? Because he was good last year, but this is another level of good.
You know, yeah, if you could sell high, you do it. But after these last 2 games, but his season, aside from these last 2 games, is almost identical to last year. He's right. And this is what we thought. This is what we thought coming into season. He got the big contract, but as bad as the Bucks have been, and they've been really bad, you know, they added Greg Monroe. They get Michael Carter-Williams for a full season. You have Jabari Parker coming back, and you have Antetokounmpo improved. I mean, this is a team that, even though they're one of the worst teams in the Eastern Conference, they have a pretty deep team. So, yeah, he's been getting opportunities the last few games. But when it comes down to it, he's still going to be 14 to 16 points a game. You know, 4 or 5 rebounds. We know the threes. We know a couple steals. If you can sell high now, sure. But, you know, if not, he's not a bad guy to own because he's going to get you those threes and get you those steals. He's going to have big scoring games like that. And, and it's pretty much his situation. But yeah, if you can get a guy to buy it on these last two games, certainly it's worth a shot trading him.
If I'm going to make you guess something, Seth, over the last 2 weeks, Chris Middleton is ranked somewhere between 1 and 30. Where would you guess that he's ranked? Is it in eight category leagues, I think? Nine category leagues.
In that, well, eight through, wait, what are the, one, 8 through 30?
No, 1 through 30.
What, in the last 2 weeks, what rank is he?
Yep.
I will go with 11.
He's fourth.
Wow.
He's averaging 24 points, 3 threes, 5 assists, 3.6 boards, 1.3 steals, and going 56% from the field on 16 attempts and 92 from the line with 2.3 turnovers. He is,
wow, that's incredible.
Absolutely on fire. And he started off the season really slow as well. So Chris Middleton destroying teams at the moment. Michael Carter-Williams is playing well as well. 11, 7, and 8, 3 steals, 3 blocks. That's exactly why you have Michael Carter-Williams, and you know that he's going to go 4 of 9 from the field and 3 of 6 from the line, although those numbers have been a little bit better this year. What seems to happen with the Bucks is when someone returns from an injury or there's a change to a rotation, everyone suffers for one game, and then it seems to revert to normal. Jared Bayless returned, Michael Carter-Williams went down to 21 minutes. The next two games, he's been back up playing the same role as before. When Carter-Williams went to the bench the first time, he played like 20 minutes, and then he played 32 minutes off the bench every night after that. It's just something they seem to do. I can't explain it. I can't explain much that happens in that organization, to be honest. But obviously, Carter-Williams, even with the return of Bayless, has to be earned. Bayless, on the other hand, 25 minutes here, 14 points and not much else. Had a really strong first game back. Struggled in the next two. He's a borderline 12-team league guy for me, not a must-own. And OJ Mayo's value in standard leagues is probably done now. 7, 4, and 3 in 23 minutes for him. What's your take on Bayless? Is he's someone that you can use, but probably more as a streaming option?
Yeah, he's a streaming option, for sure. But we're not going to see the production, I think, that we saw in that first month when he was just on fire.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 14 and 6 with 3 steals and 4 blocks, and Greg Monroe dropped in 23 points as well. Not a good night from John Henson. He played just 14 minutes for 4 points with a block. We need him to get consistent 22 to 25 minutes to be really a guy to own in standard leagues. For now, he's just a let's plug him in, hope he gets 4 blocks, and then drop him, because to hold on to him, you're not going to get that consistent value across the week. On the Pacers side of things, Paul George actually had a decent night for the first time in about a month, it feels like. He went 8 of 13 from the field for 31 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, and 5 threes. So Paul George owners can breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief there. They were without Jordan Hill and Jan Mahinmi. So Lavoie Allen got the start and went 14 and 4 with a steal and a block. Not much to really say with Lavoie Allen, I don't think, Seth.
No, you know, he's not a bad guy. If you're in a really deep league,
yeah, I agree with that.
16 teams. Yeah, I think he's worth, I mean, I don't know if he's worth a guy you're just going to roster continuously, but when he's gotten the opportunity, when guys have been hurt, when guys have sat, he's put up some pretty decent games.
Yep. Now, look, they've got just a glut of big men. Lavoie Allen, Jordan Hill, Jan Mahinmi, and Miles Turner. And all these guys, you could say, they probably should get 25-plus minutes. There's probably not enough minutes for them all to do that, especially with Paul George and CJ Miles playing the four as well. But all of them, when they get 25, 26 minutes, they're going to be worth owning, like Allen here, and like Jordan Hill we've seen, and like Mahinmi we've seen this season, and Miles Turner will do that as well. There's not enough minutes for them to go around. It's a real issue. If you're picking one of those guys, Lavoie Allen, Jordan Hill, Jan Mahinmi, and Miles Turner, to own in a 12-team league, which one is it?
Right now it's Mahinmi, because I think he's got the block. He'll get you blocks and rebounds. Yep. I don't think Turner. I think with as good as Pacers have been playing this year, I don't think Turner is going to get enough minutes to be relevant.
Yep, I agree with that. CJ Miles returned from a sore back, 19 points including 5 triples. He's gonna be this guy. He's gonna hit a lot of threes in some games. He'll hit none in others. He always gets injured. He's come off that injury now, so hopefully he can stay healthy for the next month or two, but he's a guy that should be owned. And Monte Ellis dropped 7 assists with a couple of blocks, and George Hill's form has peaked a little bit as well. 15, 6, and 3 with 3 threes. He was in a bit of a slump before the last, say, week. Good to see him getting things back in action. The next game, Seth, the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Detroit Pistons. Another big game from Karl Anthony Towns, 22, 9, and 3 with a block. I don't think there's anything we can really add to how well Karl Anthony Towns is playing this season.
Not really, no. He's the you give him the rookie of the year right now.
yeah, basically. There was no Kevin Martin again. Don't think we're going to see him again for the Timberwolves. Kevin Garnett was out with a rest, so Gorgui Dieng started, and then happened to play less minutes than he played basically for the last month. 22 minutes for Dieng, 6, 3, and 2, a steal and 2 blocks. There was a little bit of early foul trouble for Dieng, so I think we'll chalk it up to that. I don't think we're going to chalk it up to the fact that Nemanja Bjelica was playing brilliantly because he was still bad, even though he got 26 minutes. And Ricky Rubio, 9 points. On 3 of 11 shooting, we know this is going to be a problem, but still 6 rebounds, 8 assists, 2 steals, still doing that sort of stuff. What do you think of Tayshaun Prince? Big night from Prince, 25 minutes for 2 steals, and that's it. People have heard my take on the Timberwolves starting line. What's your take on Tayshaun Prince stealing minutes off other players who are actually alive?
It's silly to me. It's really silly. I mean, I get why you want guys like that on your team. I get you know, Garnett's there and Prince is there and Andre Miller's there. But to have him start and take away the minutes, to me, that's silly. I mean, if you're going to do a nominal start, like, hey, we're going to start you, play you 8 minutes, you maybe see 1 minute second half. But to be getting 25 minutes a game, you know, Shabazz Muhammad is, you know, playing, not getting minutes. And it's sort of silly to me. But, I mean, this is, I guess, what bad franchises do. Yeah. And I do like the direction the Wolves are going in. Certainly they have a nice future ahead of them, but there's a reason why they're one of the worst franchises in the NBA, and they have been for a long time.
Now, I'm fine. Kevin Garnett gets the ceremonial start. He's a Timberwolves legend, right? He comes in, he starts. What do the Timberwolves owe Tayshaun Prince? He's been there this is his first season in Minnesota. What do they owe him? Oh, you're a legend, you need to come and start. It's bullshit. Like, Andre Miller's there, and he's not playing at the moment. He's been forced out of the rotation by Tyus Jones, which I'm extremely happy about because I really like Tyus Jones. I think that he can be a really decent backup, and it's better that he's playing backup point guard than Zach LaVine. I'll get onto LaVine in a second. Jones had 5, 5, and 4 in 13 minutes, and Dynasty League guys and real deep league guys just need to pay attention to Jones, because I think if Rubio goes down, we're going to see 23, 24 minutes out of Tyus Jones, and he could be important. But yeah, Miller is not in the rotation, but the benefit of Miller being there comes in practice, comes in the locker room. The benefit of Garnett being there is for the fans. It's, look at this, the legend's back, he's starting, but it comes in practice. The benefit of Prince being there is completely baffling to me. Yeah, he'll give benefit in practice, but he doesn't need to play 25 minutes a night, and they got smashed by 25 points here. The game's over, you're losing by 25 points. Let's run a guy who, let's face it, last season could barely do anything, and showing the same thing this year, why run him out there 25 minutes? Why not give Shabazz Muhammad 30 minutes? Why not give Damian Rudej, who only played 9 minutes here, why not give him 25 minutes? It is just stupid. The fact that it took a month to get Gorgui Dieng into the lineup and play him with Karl Anthony Towns was incredulous to me as well. Andrew Wiggins had probably one of his better games. 21 points, but at least he added 3 steals. Still just gets nothing in the other categories. 3 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 3. It's always going to hamper his fantasy value. It possibly will turn around, but for now, he's going to be stuck around that 100 level. And Zach LaVine, 2 stinkers in a row. He did get back to 25 minutes here, 4 points, 4 rebounds, and 2 assists. I'm still holding Zach LaVine, but it hasn't been good the last couple. What's your take on LaVine?
It's disappointing. I really thought with Kevin Martin just pretty much, you know, he's been cut, in my opinion. I mean, he's not going to play again until he's traded, that LaVine was going to really get an opportunity. But I mean, he's getting the minutes, but you know, he doesn't seem to do well at that shooting guard position, even though he's probably better at shooting guard than he is point guard. He seems to play better when he's handling the ball.
I'll put it this way, Seth, his fantasy stats are better when he's handling the ball. I don't think that his actual, I don't think the team's play is better when he's handling the ball. And that's
right.
I think that's what you want. That's what you want a point guard to do. You want the team to be better, and they're not. But his play is also, his fantasy stats are much worse when he's a point guard. So as a fantasy owner, you want him to play point guard. If you support the Timberwolves and you're a fan of basketball, I don't think you want him to play point guard.
No, you don't. But you know, I still think he's a big part of this team, and they have to start. They have to stick with him, and we've seen him play pretty well this year for the most part. So, if you're in a shallower league, yeah, you may have to drop him. But if you're in a deeper league, we're still early enough in the season that you don't have to make drastic drops. It's okay. I can't stress this enough, and I see guys getting dropped like crazy, good players, because you're trying to win one category on a Sunday. Look, if you're going into the day, if you're going to the end of the week in a matchup and it's you're down 5-4 and you have nobody playing and he has nobody playing and you're tied in blocks and you can win that blocks. Yeah, it's nice to win blocks, but if you have to drop a good player to pick up, you know, a random guy, winning 5-4 or losing 5-4 in the long run, it's probably going to make a difference. If you have a good team, you should have no issues getting in the playoffs. If you're getting 5-4 matchups and surrounding that with, you know, 6-3 wins and 7-2 wins. But yeah, I'm not a big fan of streaming, like making drastic moves just to win one category at this point in the season where we're barely halfway through.
I agree with that. I think the mindset that comes with that, and I think this is important to note, is that people will look at that exact situation that you've mentioned. You're down 4-5 and they'll want to get that category so they win 5-4 so then you can go to your mate, I beat you. It doesn't matter. Like if you're playing like most categories gives you a win, then yes, it matters, right? You know, you could, it's 1-0 and that could be important at the end. But in an each category counted thing, with if you're going to go 4-5, I'd rather just hold on to my assets and build for the playoffs than get that one category so I could say, yeah, I won and I got that extra category back. It doesn't mean anything until you get to the playoffs, obviously, and at the end of the season, then things start coming more into focus. But making a move to get one category back when you're going to drop a player who over the course of the season might provide you 5 extra category wins, it's not worth it. And everything you said there was spot on. For the Pistons, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope broke out of his slump, 22 points, 2 threes, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals on 7 of 17 shooting. And Anthony Tolliver got red hot, going 5 of 7 from 3 for 15 points in his 16 minutes. He actually was 5 of 7 from the field. All of his shots were from 3, so a nice Anthony Tolliver game. But with Ersan Ilyasova playing bigger minutes, Tolliver's not going to find himself getting a decent enough role for us to really consider in most standard formats. Andre Drummond, 23-18, almost another 20-20 game. 1 of 7 from the free throw line. And Seth, I'll ask you this question. Could you shoot better free throws than Andre Drummond?
Yes.
Cool. I think I could as well.
Better free throws than Andre Drummond.
Yeah. I think I could shoot a better percentage than that as well. I'm sure I couldn't do anything else anywhere near as close as what he does, but I'm sure I could top him in that area. Reggie Jackson, 19-3-9 with 2 threes and 27 minutes. Brandon Jennings played 21 minutes and went 7-6-3. Okay, I know a lot of people have been asking, I'm sure you've been getting the questions as well, what do we do with Brandon Jennings? What do we do with Brandon Jennings? And I think a lot of people will look at this and think, this is a timeshare coming up. I don't see it that way. They won by 25 points. I think it's an opportunity. We don't have to run Reggie out there. Let's get a little bit of work into Brandon Jennings. Jennings is going to be a valuable player for 14-team leagues and maybe a 12-team league guy as he starts to play backup 2 and backup 3. But I don't think that this is a situation where they're limiting Reggie Jackson's minutes. We had 3 minutes of Reggie Bullock in this game, 3 minutes of Joel Anthony. That's garbage time. Yeah, those 3 minutes, yeah, you spread that out. You give Jackson 3 extra minutes and take them off Bullock or take them off Jennings, and we go back to 30-17. And then you go, okay, that's normal. I'm not panicking about it. What are you doing with Jennings, though?
He's still a guy I'm probably not owning. 14 teams, yeah, he's worth, I think, adding, seeing what transpires, because the potential upside is there. There has been talk about him maybe getting traded. I know the Knicks had mentioned it. Knicks last year were talking about trading for him until he tore his Achilles, but a trade certainly would help him. But right now, yeah, I mean, we know Brandon Jennings. He's going to shoot poorly. He's going to be really hit or miss. And last year he did have, you know, until he hurt himself, he was playing well right after that Josh Smith trade. But that was a much different team. They didn't have Ilyasova. Caldwell Pope is much improved this year. They didn't have Marcus Morris. There's a lot more balls to go around. And, of course, they didn't have Reggie Jackson. So, Reggie Jackson's a stud this season. He's going to get the minutes. Brandon Jennings, actually, I just dropped him in our superstars of fantasy league. I had him on my IR, and I'm like, look, this isn't, I need this spot more than him. So he'll have big games, but he's not going to be consistent because he's not going to get the minutes, like you said. So unless Jackson gets hurt or Jennings is traded, I don't think he's worth holding in 12-team leagues.
Yep, I agree with that completely. Seth, we are on the same page with that. Not much else to really talk about with the Pistons, although Ersan Ilyasova, again, a nice game. 10-5, 3 threes, 2 blocks. Is he a 12-team league guy or just for certain situations?
I think he is. I think he's a 12-team league guy for now. But again, we've seen him go really cold. And when he goes cold, it's, look, you can drop him. It's okay. But for now, yeah, he's getting the minutes now. And that's important because there was a point in the season early on where he was having games or he was only playing 19, 20, 22 minutes. So if he's playing 25 to 30 minutes a game, I think he's worth owning because he can get you threes. He can get you a couple blocks, some steals from that power forward position, and that can be valuable.
He's had two top 50 seasons in his NBA career. And over the last week, he's ranked inside the top 40 as well. The minutes are up for him. He's a guy that you see he can go cold. He can also go red hot and drop 20-20s with 4 threes and stuff like that. He can go massive. So, yeah, he has to be owned. The next game, the Golden State Warriors, sans Steph Curry versus the Houston Rockets. We talked Draymond already. Klay Thompson did his best Steph Curry fill-in effort, 38 points with 6 triples and 7 rebounds with a block. And Andre Iguodala had a really nice night. You alluded to that earlier, 23-4, 2 threes, a steal, a block, and 6 of 7 from both the field and the line. He's a guy that, this is a nice night from him, and he's been improving without Harrison Barnes. When Barnes comes back, is Iguodala still 12-team relevant?
I don't think Iguodala is 12-team relevant right now unless you're in a roto league. Roto, yes, because he can get you those steals, those threes, shoot with decent percentages. But in head-to-head, I don't think he's a guy you can really own because he'll put up games where he'll get you 2 points with 2 steals and nothing else. And certainly Barnes isn't going to help. So, yeah, I mean, it's only going to make things worse.
I disagree slightly. I think that he should be owned in some 12-team leagues, but only on certain teams. He's currently ranked 70th on the season, so that's obviously well within the 12-team league range. But you're right, he's only averaging 7.9 points. So if you're looking for points boost and you're not a strong points team, that's not going to work out. But if you're punting points, then his value goes up even higher because he's giving you 3.5 assists, 1.5 steals. He's shooting 49%. He's giving you a three. All these little bits that he gives you can really help, but it's got to be on the team that's designed or fits exactly what he needs. So I think I've owned him on maybe one team, and he's probably available in a few other leagues, but I don't necessarily need what he does. Sean Livingston started in place of Steph. Big game for him, 13-4-7 with 2 steals in 33 minutes. He wasn't good in the previous game that he started for Steph, so I don't think we need to really do anything with this because Steph is not going to be a long-term injury. And we saw 36 minutes from Andrew Bogut, 9-11 with a block. What do you take on him? Is he a 12-team league guy?
It's very similar like what you said about Iguodala. If you need blocks, if you need some boards, he's a guy you should own. But if you don't, I mean, if you've got, you know, Drummond and Gasol and then, you know, Monroe, let's say, on a team, okay, you're good in rebounds, you don't need the blocks, then he's a guy that's a spot you probably want to use to help boost your threes or your assists or something else. So it really depends what you need. And he's a guy, look, I mean, he really brings a lot to this team. He's definitely a better real life player than fantasy player. But we know at some point down the line, he's going to get hurt or he's going to miss some games with a phantom injury. And then it's one of those situations like, oh, well, Andrew Bogut's going to miss the next 5 games while he's resting his back. And at that point, it's like, you have to cut him anyway. So I don't think he's a must own for sure. But if you need the big man stats, he's worth riding out while he's playing as well as he is right now.
Yep, agree with that. Onto the Rockets, Dwight Howard, another big night for him. That's about 2 or 3 in a row for Howard. 21-13, 5 assists from Dwight as well, 2 steals, 3 blocks, and Seth, 5 of 6 from the free throw line. He has started to really turn it around lately. He looks more like Orlando Dwight than we've seen in the last 3 years over this last couple of games. I don't think it necessarily lasts like this, but if you drafted him, you're pretty happy with the return you're getting. at the moment. Don't be fooled into looking at the 5 or 6 from free throws and go and trade for him if you're not prepared to punt free throws, because it's not going to work out. He's still going to be a free throw guy who's at 55%, but it's the volume that kills you. So just don't forget that. James Harden went 35-5 with 3 steals and 5 triples. A big night from him. And after two games of, or probably more than two games of really sucking, Patrick Beverley played 30 minutes here, 15-4-4 with a 3 and a steal, and that reduced Ty Lawson down to 18 minutes, 5 points, 4 assists, and 2 steals. I'll get your take on Ty Lawson. What are you doing with him in 12-10 leagues? Because he was starting to show a bit of promise, but this is the thing with Lawson this season, is that then he goes back and does nothing, like in this game, and it makes him a on-again, off-again guy to me for standard leagues.
Yeah, I actually wrote an article today, and I think it's supposed to be published tomorrow on the Fantasy Fix, answering this very question about Ty Lawson. To me, and this may be an answer that people disagree with, but I think he right now, unless you're in a really in a shallower 12-team league, because let me say off the bat that the size of the league doesn't necessarily say how deep the waiver, you know, how shallow or deep it is. It's really the size of the waiver wire that is. So a 12-team league with 6 bench spots is obviously going to be much deeper than a 12-team league with 3 bench spots. But beyond that, in general, 12-team leagues, I think this may not be a popular opinion, but I think he is a must-own player right now. And unless you're really struggling, if you're a team that's around the 500 mark, or you're below 500, or you know, you're back in the standings. Yeah, you don't want to waste a spot on a guy that's going to be hit or miss, like you said. But if you have, if you're in the top 3, 4, 5 in your league, or maybe you're not, but you have some guys that are due back from injury and you know you're going to get a boost, I think he's a guy you want to own, because we know what he's done in the past. We know what he can do. He puts up big numbers when given the opportunity, and he was in the doghouse earlier this year. He seems to have gotten his way out of the doghouse, and yeah, he's not getting 30 minutes a game, but up until tonight, he was actually getting more minutes than Patrick Beverley in the 4 games since he came back from that suspension. So he was playing more than Beverley was, and tonight was a different story, and it's not going to be that way every night. But in my opinion, Lawson is the better player. Beverly is a very good defensive player, but Lawson's a better player. And I think that if you hold on to him, it may be worth it. And look, if it continues to be very hit or miss, or the bad outweighs the good, then sure, drop him. But rarely are you going to find a player with that kind of potential that we've seen him do the last 4 or 5 years on the waiver wire. So for me now, he's worth adding, worth stashing, worth holding, whatever you want to call it, and see how it plays out, because you could potentially have a top 80 player if he gets anywhere close to what he was doing in Denver the last couple seasons.
I take all those points on board, Seth, but I'll say this, that when he's played 30 minutes at the start of the season, he wasn't ownable anyway. So even when he got the minutes, he was just terrible. He just couldn't get anything happening in this team. He didn't fit with James Harden. He didn't fit in that bigger role, and he was useless in that big minutes. Now, that can change as he gets used to a new system, and I agree that if you're sitting pretty and you've got a spare spot, add him and see what happens over the next 2 weeks. But to me, he's not a must-own, and we've seen already this season, big minutes didn't mean big production for him.
One thing I agree with that, but I also agree with what you said, where he was getting used to it. He didn't seem comfortable, and I did see an interview with him the other day, or a clip from an interview where he even said that it took him a while to adjust. And he's not the man, you know. He was sort of the man in Denver, and we're not going to see him averaging 19 points a game, but he, in the beginning of the season, he wasn't shooting the ball well. He wasn't doing anything well. He is shooting over 50% in the last week. So when he's on the court, he's not hurting you. If he can get minutes and get in the 13.5 assist, 1-3, 1-steal range, to me, that's going to be valuable down the line.
Clint Capela played 24 minutes. He had 5.6 rebounds and a block. Terrence Jones was disgusting. 15 minutes for Jones for 2 points, and Donatas Montiunas played 6 minutes. So even though Capella's not putting up great numbers, he's still clearly playing more minutes than Jones and more minutes than Montiunas. Jones, to me, is not someone that I'm holding in 12-10 leagues. I'm not an advocate of holding for hypothetical trades until we get a bit closer to the trade deadline, when teams are basically forced into action. We've had exactly, we had one trade this year.
Yeah, Ish Smith, I think, right?
Oh, two, sorry. Ish Smith and Mario Chalmers. We've had two trades this season. So I'm not if you've held Terrence Jones hoping for a trade so far, you've missed out on 2 months of production from a spot. And it's hard to do. And for a guy who I just don't think is a great player anyway. Capella's not a must-own, but he fits certain teams. And Motta Yunus apparently is a non-factor at the moment. As much as I like him as a player, he's just not getting it done. Trevor Ariza played 37 minutes, 11 points with 3 threes, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, and no steals. Not a great night from Trevor. The next game, the Phoenix Suns and the Oklahoma City Thunder. We've talked a lot of Suns already, Seth, but what we didn't talk about is Tyson Chandler, who went 13-10 with 4 assists in 31 minutes, and that relegated Alex Len to just 17 minutes. Okay, Chandler, that's big. It's probably his best game all season. Do you think that this is a sign?
He had one pretty big game, like the first week, where he had like 17 rebounds or something. Yep.
Do you think he should be owned?
You know, I would have said no a week ago. I think right now he's worth adding.
Yep.
But I mean, he's the guy that he is that Enes Kanter guy that, all right, Adam playing for a couple of games. But if you need to stream him, drop him. He's not even close to a must own. He's not blocking shots. He's not shooting his typical 60% from the field or whatever he used to shoot in those big seasons. And certainly in games like tonight, it was close. And he played a lot because we had talked about the big men in Oklahoma that he had to match up against him. But in games where they're going to get blown out, you're going to see him put up 4 points, 4 rebounds, and play 12 minutes. So certainly not must-own, but he's definitely a guy that can go on a run of, you know, 4 or 5 double-doubles in a row, and it's worth seeing if he can do that, but be ready to drop him if you need to.
They also had John Lua, who's played a lot of center this year, out. So yeah, Lua could have played 10 minutes at center and put Chandler at 18 minutes and put Len at 16 minutes still. So I'm not overreacting too much to this one. And if Markieff Morris gets back into the rotation, which appears unlikely, but with Hornacek changing things literally every single game, Morris could play 20 minutes next game, and then he will play center, and that will move Chandler down again. So, yeah, fine if you've got a spot, but much like we referenced earlier, if there's someone good on your team, don't drop him to go and add Tyson Chandler, because this could be, you could add him today, and then by tomorrow, he plays 18 minutes when Lua gets back and when Morris gets back into the rotation, and they decide not to go ultra small. This team is just changing so, so much. Brandon Knight shot 6 of 20 for 15 points, had 6 assists and 2 steals. His efficiency was always going to go down without Eric Bledsoe. It has, but hopefully those counting stats start to come up. On the Thunder, you referenced it earlier, Seth. Kevin Durant struggled. 9 of 21, so that's definitely not his usual shooting. 3 of 5 from the free throw, and that's an odd one. 23 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, a block, and 2 threes. So not a complete write-off, but definitely not a great night from Kevin Durant. And the rest of the Thunder, no one else scored in double digits apart from Durant and Westbrook. There was just a lot of yuckness happening. Ibaka 9 and 5 with 2 blocks, and they'll still be happy they scored 110 points and won the game. Campaign, I really like this guy. 14 minutes for him, 7 points, 4 assists. DJ Augustine is out of the rotation now. Where would you be looking for Campaign in a redraft league? I'm a massive, massive Dynasty fan of Campaign. I think if he's a starter, he has got top 50 fantasy potential written on him, all over him. In a redraft league with him getting these 14 minutes a game now, is it 20 team leagues that you have to go for? Because 7 and 4 in 14 minutes is not bad return.
Yeah. If you need the assists, it's got to be 20. Other than that, I mean, even that's borderline. You know, he's not going to play as much in some games as others, but definitely in Dynasty, he's certainly worth owning.
Okay, Seth. In the last 2 weeks, where does Cameron Payne rank in 9 category leagues? He's played 12 minutes a game over the last 2 weeks, 5 games.
And only 12 minutes a game.
12 minutes a game, 5 games, last 2 weeks.
I will say 110th.
80th. In 12 minutes. He's per 36 numbers over that stretch, 24 points, 3.6 threes, 5.5 rebounds, 7.9 assists, 3.6 steals. He has just got, his game is so fantasy friendly. His per 36s on the season are 19, 6.5, 7.5 with 3 triples and 2.5 steals. Like, that is so tantalizing. And even in 12 minutes, he's a top 100 player. Now, I'm not saying add him in a 12-team league or a 14-team league or a 16-team league. But I reckon in an 18-team league, I'm okay with it. Maybe even a 16-team league because he's putting up just crazy numbers at the moment in limited time. And four assists in an 18-team league is impossible to get off the waiver wire. Who's giving you four assists off a waiver wire? There's no one, is there? You can't find that sort of number. And that really inflates his value. But I love the fact that he's getting into this rotation over Augustine. And he's putting up these big numbers because he is a guy that all through the preseason and talk draft stuff at the start of the year, I was massive on Cameron Payne in terms of his fantasy potential. He just went to the worst situation he possibly could have gone to, basically. That's it. I don't need to say much more about Cameron Payne, I don't think, unless you've got anything more to add.
No, you cool. Covered it.
The Los Angeles Clippers and the New Orleans Pelicans. DeAndre Jordan grabbed 20 boards, had 3 blocks and a steal. Nice night there. JJ Redick. Whenever there's no Blake Griffin, this is a pretty stock standard thing from JJ Redick. He's on fire. 26 points, 4 threes. That's 2 or 3 big games in a row from him. We saw an extended stretch of it last season. He was available on waiver-wise in some leagues before Griffin went down. Hopefully you snapped him up because this is where he really starts to shine. He was a top 30 guy last year when Griffin was out. And he's looking like he's going to be that sort of guy again now. Really efficient, you know, shooting the ball well, hitting threes, scoring, just doing a lot. You referenced Chris Paul's poor game earlier. What about the mess in terms of the guys actually replacing Griffin and that just trash fire of a small forward position? There is no one that's worth looking at in 12-team leagues, is there?
No. It's just, man, I can't believe what they've done. It's so, I mean, it's this offseason, they just kept adding and adding and adding small forwards, and not a single one of them has done well. And to the point where Doc Rivers is starring Mamute. Yep. Like, of all the guys that they signed or trade for or whatever, it's Mamute that's starting. Lance Stevenson can't even get on the court. Josh Smith didn't play. It's like they're not playing Lance Stevenson or Josh Smith. Wes Johnson is not good. Pierce needs to retire. It's really ugly, and it's crazy that they're actually still winning ball games.
It is
with Griffin out, and that lineup, it's unreal.
Now, Mamute was on the Sixers last year. He was traded to the Kings, I think, in the offseason, and failed a physical, and then he got cut, and then he got signed. I reckon about a week before the season started, it felt like, and now he's their starting small forward playing 26 minutes. Look, he's a really good defender, like really good, but offers nothing offensively. He's a bit younger than, say, a Tayshaun Prince. But the 3 and the 4 for this team at the moment is just diabolical. There's just nothing happening. And the guys they signed, Stevenson, Smith, you know, Austin Rivers, Jamal Crawford, none of these guys fit together. They don't make sense playing together. Just look, they've all got big names, and they've all got, you know, impressive resumes at some point in their career. They don't fit together, and there's no fantasy relevance from Smith, from Stevenson, from Rivers, from Johnson, from Pierce, from Mamute, from Crawford. None of these guys should be owned in 12-team leagues. Cole Aldrich?
I actually disagree with Crawford. I think while Griffin's out, I think Crawford has some value if you're looking for points or threes.
No, okay. Look, I can understand that, but his last week, he's ranked 171st. He has given you 13.5 points, but if you're in a 12-team league, that's not great. That's okay. And he gives you nothing apart from that, like 1.8 rebounds, 1.8 assists, 0.2 steals, 0.2 blocks. There's just nothing in these other categories. But I can understand, for me, he's more of a streaming option, but there's just so much nothingness on this team. It's not even funny. On to the Pelicans. Alvin Gentry was hinting at, you know, changing the starting lineup. He did, but he did it at halftime. Didn't do it at the start of the game. He moved Alonzo G out of the starting lineup and brought in my mate Norris Cole to play. He played 34 minutes, Norris Cole, which is a travesty in itself. 15, 5, and 4 for Cole with 2 threes and a steal. What are you doing with Norris Cole? Are you adding him if he's going to be a starter and playing 30 minutes?
I mean, if you can guarantee me that.
I can't because he's bad. He's just not a good player. So if a team's playing him 30 minutes, they're going to lose. I'm fairly confident in that assertion. Well, if he plays 30 minutes,
you're talking about one of the worst teams in the NBA right now. So I'm fairly confident they're losing.
We're also talking about one of the worst players on one of the worst teams. That's how bad. I think his PER was 4, like about 3 or 4 days ago when I checked. He is, look, not a bad line from him here. And in a 14-team league, yeah, you can't ignore someone who might get 30 minutes. But in a 12-team league, he's just not a good player. And I think at some point they have to – Gentry has to realize that, you know what, our best players are Tyreek Evans, Ryan Anderson, Drew Holiday, Anthony Davis, Eric Gordon. Let's play them all 35 minutes each. Not this bullshit of Ryan Anderson playing 29 and Drew Holiday playing 38 or 28 while Norris Cole plays 35. Get Alexei Ajinsa out there more than 3 minutes. Why is he playing 3 minutes and Omar Asik, who's got no hands, is playing 21 minutes? There's so much wrong with this team. And again, when these stupid things happen, I'm glad that they lose. Evans, 14, 6, and 9 with 3 steals. Yeah, about average for him. 17 and 4 for Ryan Anderson. Drew Holiday, 11, 2, and 6. And Anthony Davis, 14 and 15 with 2 blocks. And you look at that and you go, yeah, that feels like below average. But it's because it's Anthony Davis. And 15 rebounds is still a pretty good number. And adding 2 blocks as well. Not too worried about that sort of production. Anything else you see on the Pelicans that's worth discussing, Seth?
Nope.
Cool. The Portland Trailblazers and the Utah Jazz. CJ McCollum, 32, 7, and 6 with 6 triples. Another big game from CJ. He's been, you know, the last 2 or 3 games without Damian Lillard, he's been great. But don't mistake that for the fact that when Lillard's out, he's going to be fantastic, because I had a look at it today. His first 2 games with Lillard out, they were actually worse than his previous 3 games when Lillard played. So yes, he's been good the last couple of games, but it's not a blanket statement that McCollum's going to be a DFS must-own player, destroy lineups, everything like that. Because his first 2 games without Lillard, he struggled. He was worse than what he was previously. So I'm not taking anything away from him, but just don't think that that is a narrative that is like he is going to be a destroyer of worlds in every single game that Lillard's not there. He's been great this season, though. No denying that. Myers Leonard back in on form. Oh, by the way, Seth, happy New Year. It's midnight there.
Thank you. It is. It just dropped. Just turned midnight. Thanks for that.
No problem at all. So happy New Year to all you guys who are watching live, who are on the west coast of the states as midnight has just struck. Myers Leonard, 17 points, 5 triples, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. Is he back to you? Is he back in consideration? Are you adding him in 12-team leagues? My answer is yes.
Yeah, I'm yes too.
Yep. Now, so you're adding him over, say, like a guy you mentioned earlier, like Tyson Chandler. Are you adding him over a Ty Lawson?
No. I'll tell you the reason why. Is one of the themes we've talked about when you talked about Cameron Payne and like even Norris Cole, is how hard assists are to find. And Myers Leonard, yes, he's going to hit the threes. He's going to score you points, but he's not going to get you a lot of rebounds. He's not going to block any shots. He's not going to steal the ball at all. He's not going to get you assists. And he is a guy that can be inconsistent. We've seen this year up and down, up and down, up and down. So, yeah, I want to own Myers Leonard while he's shooting the ball this well. But to me, what a guy like Ty Lawson can bring is more valuable than what Myers Leonard can bring.
Yep, I can understand that thought process. Yeah. Alan Crabb, 15 points with 3 threes. He's benefiting from Lillard being definitely. He's not a guy that I want to own long term in 12 team leagues. And this game was a big margin pretty early on. So we saw guys like Pat Connaughton and Luis Montero get into the lineup. Also, we saw one of the plays of the year right at the last game of the 2015 year with Tim Frazier getting a loose ball out of bounds and then throwing it back in over the backboard for an alley-oop to Noah Vonleh. If you haven't seen it, go and check it out. But there is zero chance that he meant to do that. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
There is no way he threw that to set that up for an alley. If he did, Tim Frazier's the greatest basketballer of all time. But have a look. Vonleh's not even anywhere in position. He's not making a move for the basket. It was complete arse. He threw it up, and it went into the exact right spot, and Vonleh jumped up and alley-ooped it. But fantastic play. Zero chance that he meant it. Zero. What are you doing with Al-Farouq Aminu? 26 minutes for him, 5.6 rebounds, a 3, and an assist. He's been a bit disappointing this year.
Actually, just to let you know really quick that game's not up on the screen.
Okay, I better bring that up then. Thanks. There you go. Sorry, guys.
Al-Farouq Aminu, actually, I was asked a question last night about him. What was a person on Twitter asking me He wanted to add a player. I couldn't remember who it was, but he was deciding whether he should drop Aminu or drop John Lure. I said Aminu. After, you know, he actually had a pretty good last 10 days or so after a hot start, but he fell off in between. He's not blocking any shots anymore. He's not stealing the ball like he was that first few weeks of the season. He's shooting the ball really poorly, under 40% on the season, I believe. And he has made some three-pointers in the last week, but for me, I'm not owning him in 12 teams right now. He's a streamer to me. 14 teams, yes, he needs to be owned, but he's no longer must own or anything more than a streamer to me in 12-team leagues.
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate. He has dropped off a bit. Look, his numbers still look okay on the season, but they're not what we thought they could be. And if there's someone else there you want to go and add, yeah, I think he's expendable because I don't think he's going to really crack top 100 value or massively into the top 100 as the season progresses. Mason Plumlee, only 20 minutes here, so not his greatest night, but he'd been playing quite well before this. 3-9 with 2 assists, and Ed Davis played just 10 minutes. But I don't think we're reading too much into the rotations in this game where they got destroyed. On to the Utah Jazz, Rod Hood, 18-7-6, 4 triples, a steal, and a block. Probably his best game of the season. He's a must-own player to me in 12-team leagues with the upside, especially with Alec Burks out. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do.
Gordon Hayward was big again, 23-10 with 4 triples, and Jeff Withey added 4 blocks and a massive dunk towards the end of the game in 35 minutes for 10 points. But hey, when Gobert and Favors come back, what's he going to do? Not a lot. Trey Lyles had 8 boards and 4 assists in his 32 minutes. There's not much to talk about with this team, to be honest. There's just so many guys out. Burks, Favors, and Gobert, 3 of their top 6 players are out. Favors will be back soon. Gobert will be back sooner. Burks, he's a long way off. But for now, there's not... Look, if Hood's around, you grab him. If Burke's around, maybe you look at adding him. Depends on your team. But otherwise, these other guys who are getting 17 minutes, Joe Ingles, Chris Johnson, Hal Neto at 19 minutes, they're not... They're just not doing anything fantasy-wise. But the Jazz, they'll be pretty happy to get that big victory on the back of Hood, Burke, and Hayward putting up big games. Seth, anything you want to talk about with the Jazz, or is there not much to cover there?
I think we've talked about him a lot, but remember when Trevor Booker, everyone wanted to drop like the best player on their team for Trevor Booker when Gobert got hurt? I don't think I've noticed him in a box score in weeks.
He had 15 rebounds in the game before this one, but that's probably about it. And that's what he'd do. He'll go and have a massive game, and then he'll go 3-4-2 in this one. And if Booker had a game today, if he had gone 10-7 in today's game, I would have taken down the Moneyball tournament today, I'm pretty sure. But he didn't. He went 3-4, so thanks for that, Trev. I had everyone else that went off. I had Hood, I had Westbrook, I had everyone else scoring almost 50 points, and then Booker put up about 11. So thanks, Trev. Seth, it's time for us to transition and talk about the games for tomorrow. We're going to have a short break as I get myself ready, and you get yourself ready to transition into preview instead of review mode.
This is the part with just the guitar, while we wait on the bass and drums. I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come in now. Me and the sky are on a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus lets you know you can't see what I see.
To talk some DFS for New Year's Day. Seth, there are 5 games on. It's get stuck into it. The first game is the Orlando Magic and the Washington Wizards. There's no spread available for this because, I assume, because of Lord Alfred Payton is considered questionable after having his ankle injuries. I would say, if I'm going one way, I would say that Payton doesn't play. He's had this injury over the past couple of three or so games. It's really bothered him. I think he'd want to at least sit out another game to get himself right. DFS value, I don't know if there's a massive amount in this game. I like Nick Vucevic at 8,200. He's been tearing it up recently. Got a 42.8 average across his last three games on FanDuel. And Evan Fournier maybe stands to gain a little bit too. And at 5,600, he's pretty reasonably priced. Basically a 30-point guy over the last five games. What do you think? If Payton misses, do you go and chance yourself with Victor Oladipo at 5,800? Do you throw in Shabazz Napier? What do you do in that situation? Napier's a minimum salary guy, so he might have some intrigue.
I mean, if we're just talking about point guard, yeah, I guess. But overall, I do think that Fournier benefits the most.
Yep.
He was a big play for me on Wednesday night. I knew that Payton was going to play, but I was just not expecting him to last the game, and he didn't. A combination of the ankle, and he was sick. A little bit sick as well. So I do like Fournier the best of those, and he's still very reasonably priced with how well he's been playing lately.
Victor Oladipo is $200 more than Fournier. Is there any world in which you would take Oladipo over Fournier at the moment?
No, not. I mean, uh-huh. If Oladipo was at 5,000, yeah, maybe. But on a short day with only five games, you're going to probably end up leaving salary on the table anyway. Oladipo has been just bad, just very bad the whole season. Yep. And until he snaps out of it, you certainly can't play him at 5,800.
The Wizards are a relatively easy team for shooting guards to put up numbers, so I like Fournier even more in that sort of sense. I think Toby Harris is a bit overpriced at 6,400, but I do, for the Wizards side of things, Marcin Gortat at 71, he's been playing fantastically well. He's got a 37.5 average over his last five games, and at 7,000, that's perfect value. So I think he's someone that you can use, but if I'm choosing between him and Vucevic, I'd rather spend that extra 1,000, depending on how I'm structuring my team. But I think Vucevic gives you more bang for buck, and he's more likely to return 5x value than what Gortat is in this one. What about John Wall? You got to spend up for him. He's now over 10,200. The Magic are a pretty tasty opposition, though, in terms of what point guards can do. He's almost averaging 50 across his last three games. John Wall, are you all for running him out there?
Yeah, I mean, he's expensive, but he's also pretty safe. And so, yeah, like you said, good matchup, no Payton probably, or even if he is, he's not going to be 100%. I like him tonight. Though, I mean, there are some other good point guard, a couple of other decent point guard options. I mean, if you're going to go, we'll talk about those guys later, but, he's 1,500 more than Kyle Lowry and 1,600 more than Kemba Walker, which, yeah, it may be worth saving some money and rostering one of those guys over Wall, because they could very well put up very similar numbers.
Garrett Temple's been in a bit of a funk. He's still been getting 30-plus minutes, averaging 35 across his last three, but barely, he's not even cracking 15 points. At 4,100, he's not a bad GPP guy. Same as Jared Dudley at 4,000. He put up over 30 in his last game, but it struggled a couple of games before that. But we know that if he gets out there and plays 32 minutes, that things could really come off for you, and you could easily exceed 25 fantasy points from him. So I don't mind using him. And Otto Porter, back in the starting lineup, put up a pretty big game in his last one. He's at 6,000. Is that something that interests you, or is that salary too high?
Yeah, it's not bad. He's been playing well. I think he's benefited with Beal being out of the lineup. I think I'm okay with that, as long as it's not preventing me from getting somebody else.
The other guy that you need to pay attention to is Ramon Sessions, and I know I say this a lot, but it's an easy matchup for point guards against the Magic. He's priced at 4,200. He's not expensive. He's averaging 23 points across his last five games. He's been very consistent. He's basically giving you 22 to 24 points every night. At 4,200, that's not a great tournament play. But in a cash game, if you're looking to save that extra money and maybe play a John Wall to get those 50 points, you know, playing Sessions in there as well, who's playing alongside Wall, he can give you 4, 5, 6 assists as well. You're almost locked into 22 points with him, it feels like, pretty much every night, at least while Beal and Gary Neal are out. So I don't mind using him, and I don't imagine his ownership percentage is going to be very high, and he'll just be that consistent 22 sort of guy. Over his last five games, Seth, his high score is 25 and his lowest score is 20. And that's a pretty consistent range at that 4,000 salary mark. And for cash games, you want exactly that, someone who's going to give you 20 points at that salary. That's bang, 5x value right there, and it's consistent. And there's not many guys who give you that sort of value, I don't think. Anything else you like from this game?
No, it looks good to me.
Cool. The Charlotte Hornets and the Toronto Raptors, the next game. The Raptors are favored by 6.5. The total is 196.5. There are a few injuries we need to pay attention to here, mainly from the Charlotte side of things. Jeremy Lin is questionable with his ankle issue. Spencer Hawes is questionable with his back. And Nick Batum is questionable with a toe sprain. Now, we saw Batum in the last game was questionable, went out there and almost triple-doubled. Lin missed the last game, and so did Spencer Hawes. So we need to check to see what these guys do. If Lin is out, I think that, you mentioned it before, using Kemba Walker becomes extra appealing. 8,600 for him. He's averaging almost 50 across his last three as well. He's a changed guy. He's getting stacks of minutes. Not that difficult a matchup against. Look, Larry's a good defender, but they still allow fantasy points to point guards. Kemba Walker at 8,600. Do you like Kemba Walker at 86 or Lowry at 87?
I think Kemba's just really hot right now, so I'll take him.
He's definitely hot. I reckon I'd run Kemba out there as well. Jeremy Lin has been fantastic value when he's played, but on the ankle injury, I'd probably leave him alone there. And if there's no Spencer Hawes, Frank Kaminsky at 4,100, much like we talked about just then with Ramon Sessions, he's been almost a 20-point guy, you know, most nights when he's getting these minutes. I don't think he's all that reliable. I would probably rather, if I'm spending up on one of their power forwards, I'd rather go 600 extra and take Cody Zeller, who's had a 26-point average across his last three games. But both those guys, I think, deserve some consideration against a Raptors front court, which is not the greatest defensively. So I think there's some value from both of those guys. How do you take Kaminsky and Zeller?
I agree with you. I think Kaminsky, if Hawes doesn't play, probably has more upside.
Yep.
But I think Zeller is definitely the safer cash game guy. Like you said, he's not gonna have 25 and 10, but he'll get you the 12 points, the 6 rebounds, and pretty much get you around value, which is safe enough.
Terrence Ross is another guy who's really played himself into a nice bench role. He's taken minutes away from Corey Joseph. He's averaging 29 across the last three, even with Damari Carroll back. He's priced at 4,000. He's averaging 20 across his last three. He can be a similar guy to, say, that Ramon Sessions, that 20 points at 4,000, 5x value at a shooting guard in a cash game. Now, he's probably a bit more risky, but he's also got the ability to go off and hit, you know, hit five threes and score 25 points. So Terrence Ross is someone that's in play. I'm not hating him. I am hating Damari Carroll, though, at 5,400. He's just not the same guy. And I threw this theory out the other day, Seth, is that, okay, he was fantastic in Atlanta. We know that. But his percentages have come down so much in Toronto, and they were much lower in Utah as well. Is that an Atlanta system thing?
Maybe it was a contract thing.
The other thing that I throw out there is that Kent Bazemore has increased his percentages by about 15% this year, playing the same position, and he comes out of contract. Will the same thing happen to him?
Maybe. I also think that Carroll, well, he just missed time with a mysterious contusion or whatever, but he has had plantar fasciitis the whole season. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it with Damian Lillard the last week. He's missed a week. We've seen it with players in the past in any sport. It's something that really saps your drive off your foot, because it's a foot injury, and for basketball players especially, it's going to really hurt you when you're jumping and pivoting. And I think that that's certainly affecting his game. I mean, I agree with you that it may have been a Atlanta thing, but I think he's still in pain. I think his foot's still bothering him. So
that's fair. There are other factors involved.
That's not helping.
Now, what about your boy DeMar DeRozan? He's averaging 44 points across his last three. He dropped 54 in the last game. He has been, I think it's fair to say, he's been incredibly good this year. He's doing more than just scoring. He's dishing assists, he's rebounding, he's actually getting his steals up there. He's hitting a couple more threes. At 8,400, it's a pretty hefty salary, but the odds of him getting over 40 points feels pretty high. What do you think about using him here?
I think he's one of those guys that you have to play with how hot he is. I think every time I come on the show the rest of the season, you're going to rub that one in my face. But yeah, he's playing great this year. And he is really just playing really great. I would really imagine if he could hit those three pointers.
He would be, how good would he be? He would be so good.
Yeah, but yeah, it really would. I don't know if you know, did you notice that I trade for him in one of our leagues?
Oh, did you? I didn't say that.
Yeah, in the put up or shut up league, I think it was about a month ago, maybe. I don't remember what the trade was, but I traded for him, and then I traded for Carmelo Anthony like the same day, to get myself some two big scores. But yeah, he's definitely worked out for me so far.
Yeah, he's been great so far this season. Nick Batum is also averaging over 40 points in his last three games. Does the toe injury worry you, and matching up against Damari Carroll and playing some Corey Joseph on you, and the Raptors have been able to shut down small forwards a bit, does that dissuade you from using him at 7,400?
Damari Carroll does a little bit, even if he's not 100%, and you add on the toe injury. I mean, normally Batum's a kind of guy that if he is playing, you don't need to worry about him, because even if he's not scoring, he's doing other things. But the defensive matchup does worry me a little bit. He's on the road. He's got the toe. Probably someone I'm going to stay away from at that price.
Jonas Valanciunas at 5,600 hasn't gotten it going yet, so I think we'll leave him alone. And Jeremy Lamb, if Jeremy Lamb misses, put up 28 points in the last game. He's at 4,200. I'd probably love it if he was under 4,000. He would be a great guy to look at if Lin was out. But I still don't hate using him at 4,200. But the luster has worn off his season since the way that it started. Anything else from that one, Seth?
Not really. Not too much there. But yeah, I'm not liking Valanciunas at all right now.
No.
So he's a guy I agree with you. I'm staying away from no matter what the price is until he starts to pick it up.
Dallas and Miami, the next game. The Heat are favored by 3. The total is 194. Josh McRoberts has already been ruled out. Justice Winslow looks like he'll come back from that ankle injury. And we still got no idea if Darren Williams is going to play. We keep hearing that he's day-to-day. I think he's participating in shoot-arounds. If he is out, that's an if. JJ Barea has been great in, I think, three of the four games that he's started in place of Williams. He's put up 36.6 in the last game. He's got a 30-point average across his last five. He's at 4,400, but the Heat are a nightmare for opposition point guards. Does that, say Williams is out, are you playing Barea no matter what, or does the Heat defense and the way that they've been able to restrict opposition point guards maybe want you to go in a different direction?
The Heat have been great against point guards, but I mean, that price hasn't gone up at all on Barea. And as long as Williams is out, I think you can't not take advantage of that price. Over the last 2 weeks, actually, the Heat overall in DFS, they're better than they're like 15th, 14th best against point guards, but they're in the bottom three in points given up and in three-pointers given up. So there is some value there, even if they're not allowing assists or whatever. But they've been giving up some big scoring games. So, yeah, I think you have to play him at that price if Williams isn't playing.
I agree with that completely. Chandler Parsons at 5,200. He laid an egg in the last game, but he'd been really strong before that. I think I like getting him out there at 5,200. The minutes for him are back. There's no restrictions anymore. And he'd been really good, just disappointed in the last game. And Hassan Whiteside at 7,500, it all comes down to minutes with him generally. At 7,500, though, you know that he can drop 35 fantasy points, 40 fantasy points pretty comfortably, but there is a risk factor involved with Whiteside. Do you like him at 7,500? Or would you rather Bosch at 7,500?
Yeah, I'd rather Bosch, I think. I mean, they're very similar. I mean, if you look, they're averaging the exact same amount of fantasy points. But Yeah, I think I like Bosch a little bit more. I think Whiteside, like you said, his floor is lower than Bosch's. Yep. Because you know he's not going to have a big scoring game. He's going to need those blocks and the rebounds to get you the points. So I'll go with Bosch. Bosch has been pretty hot of late, so I'll go with him. And against his hometown Dallas. Well, they're playing Miami, but his hometown Dallas. Oh no, it's Houston. Well, I don't know. Forget
Texas.
That.
It's all Texas.
Forget that narrative. But yeah, I go with Bosch.
Yep. No, that's fair enough. Goran Dragic at 5,900. Yeah, it's probably still a little bit high for me. He's been picking it up, but not enough where I want to go and use him. Wes Matthews not giving me enough reason to use him either. And Dwayne Wade at 7,400 has been really good lately. 37-point average across his last three games. Don't mind getting him out there. There's always the risk with him in season long, but if you know he's going to play, which we think he's going to play here, and we've got no reason not to think he's going to play, he's been really good and he's been really consistent. So not a completely terrible guy to go out there and use. What about Dirk at 6,800? Any appeal in using Dirk?
Dirk's the kind of guy that I like to fill in at the end of when I set my lineup if I have that amount of money. But he's not usually a guy I build my lineup around. He's one of those like, oh wow, I have $7,000 left. I guess I'll use it on Dirk, you know, because he doesn't contribute in a lot of areas besides scoring and some threes. So he's not gonna his ceiling is a little bit lower.
Yep, no, exactly. I'm not big on using Dirk here, nor am I big on using Zaza Pachulia against Hassan Whiteside, even though his numbers lately, 32.8 across the last three, look good at 6,500, but not against Hassan Whiteside. Anything else do you think from that game that's worth mentioning?
I mean, Felton's another guy. I mean, a lot of these point guards, and you know, Felton and Bray are really good values right now while Williams is out. Gerald Green was a guy last week that I liked, but he's really cooled off. So yep. I'm probably staying away from him now that Tyler Johnson's back.
I agree with all of that. The next one is the Knicks and the Bulls. We do not know the status of Derrick Rose, who missed last game with right hamstring tendonitis. He obviously has a big impact because if he is out, that means that Aaron Brooks will get the start, and Aaron Brooks is going to be priced at 4,000. He dropped 33.7 in the game without Rose, so you'd definitely be looking at getting him in at 4,000 if Rose is out. If Rose plays, not really sure you want to go and use him at 6,400, but that's a situation to have a look at. I think that Taj Gibson, his price has gone up to 5,000, but it's not too extreme, and he's been giving you that value back pretty comfortably over the last five games, averaging 27 points. So you know he's been relatively consistent. He's been really consistent at that sort of price, so I'm okay using him. And Pau Gasol at 8,700 has also been consistent and consistently good. He's got a 38.7 average across those last five games. He's always a threat to go for 40, especially against this Knicks team. I think that both of those guys are in play depending on the way that you construct your lineup. The other guy that I want to mention here in terms of big men is Robin Lopez. Seth, 4,100 for him. A big game in the last one, 33.4. He's picked it up. He's averaging 23.8 across his last five. He's priced at 4,100. The trend seems to be when the other teams have got a lot of big strong guys, or a lot of big men in general, Lopez gets more minutes. Now, we're talking about the Bulls. We've got Gibson, Gasol, Portis, Mirotic out there as well. Do you think this is a game where Lopez gets closer to 30 or closer to 20 minutes?
I mean, like you said, a lot of big men, he should play more, but it hasn't always worked out that way with him. We've seen games where Kyle O'Quinn starts getting minutes. At his price, he's worth playing, I think, if you're just punting that center position.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the salary for him is nice. And if he gives you 26 points, 27 points, it's a pretty good result. And I think that he can get these extra minutes against Chicago. What's your take on Kristaps?
What was that?
That's Stephen A. Smith mispronouncing Kristaps Porzingis' name.
Porzingis.
How does he say? Wait, let me hear that one more time.
Okay.
Porzingis.
Porzingis.
Porzingis. God, I hate Stephen A. Smith. he's right now. I'm staying away from him. He's slowed down a little bit. So that price a little bit for me. I mean, if you look at his game log, it's just like it's a very good game followed by a bad game, followed by a very good game, followed by a bad game, and And in those two bad games, the minutes were really poor. Actually, he's only played 30 minutes once, it looks like, over his last 10 games. So, the guy I'm staying away from tonight. I think Carmelo Anthony is a guy you have to play tonight.
8,600. I think it's a great price.
Yeah.
I think he's in a great spot.
Yeah, and I love the matchup there. I think he's going to take on a big load, a scoring load, and I think you got to play him.
Jimmy Butler has been struggling a little bit lately. Hasn't been struggling that much, but has been struggling a little. But at 8,300, if you're looking to shell out some money, he's not a bad guy to have a look at. Would you rather Butler or would you rather DeMar DeRozan? Similar salaries, similar position.
What was DeRozan at, 86?
No, 84. Well, after
84, yeah. can I get both? I'll take both.
Okay, cool. I'm happy with that. I reckon you could work a way to get them both in there, but DeRozan has definitely been outperforming Butler of late. I still think I'd rather get Butler in there, but it's close.
I mean, I think you can. I mean, look, for the guys we talked about, I think you can get both in there. I think that we mentioned Lopez, Barea, Sessions, guys like that that can really save you salary. I think you can get both in there.
There's another one to look at as well at a low salary as a point guard is Jose Calderon. He dropped 23.4 in the last game. He's averaging over 20 in the last three games. Derrick Rose or Aaron Brooks, it doesn't matter. They're not good defenders. It all depends on if he gets the minutes, but. Yeah, again, at that salary, if he gives you 25 points, you've won. Like, you've won that position. Like, you've got your value back. So he's another one that you can throw in there at a low salary. I don't imagine his ownership's going to be through the roof. So he's another guy that I think you can have a look at in this sort of spot. What about Bobby Portis and Nikola Mirotic? Completely up in the air with what they do. Mirotic had a massive game across last weekend. Two stinkers in a row. Bobby Portis played well in the last game. 25.5 points in 26 minutes. But his minutes are subject to change as well. Are they strictly tournament guys?
I'm not touching Mirotic at all. But Portis, yeah, tournament. But, you know, it's sort of like he goes hand in hand. And as bad as Mirotic has been, like you said, last week he just blew up. And that limits Portis. So I'm probably staying away from both guys, really. Portis does have a very appealing salary, so like you said, a tournament guy, but I'm not touching Mirotic.
And the last game of the night, Seth, is one for everybody who's trying to get over their hangover. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Los Angeles Lakers.
The red-hot Philadelphia 76ers.
2-1 in the last three. And it's all fueled, Seth, by Ish Smith, who's priced at $5,800. He's averaging 35.7 in his three games in Philadelphia. Talk about must-play point guards. He's going to be on pretty much everyone's roster. So if you're in a cash game and a head-to-head, I reckon you've got to have him in your lineup.
Yeah, you do. I think this is going to be a fun game to stack a little bit.
There's so many guys to look at here.
Yeah. And most guys are priced well. And so, yeah, I think you got to play a lot of guys. I like Noel. I like Clarkson. I like Smith. Lou Williams. I mean, all these guys. Just do all. Well, I don't think FanDuel lets you do all from two teams, but it would be fun actually if you could do that with this game. It just really, especially for the East Coasters in states, you stack your lineups and you spend all New Year's night into the wee hours of the morning watching the two worst teams in the NBA play each other.
There is so much value in this game. I think Kobe at 6,900. I think is worth looking at as well. Even though his shooting has dropped off a bit, he's still giving you 26 fantasy points a game. And at 6,900, you know he's got a little bit of value. I don't think he's the greatest guy to look at here, but it's against the Sixers. Hollis Thompson is minimum salary. He's getting basically 30 minutes a night. Now, he didn't in the last game, but in a tournament, he can get hot and hit threes. And again, you have to factor into both of these teams. Their defense is bad, and you can get big runs. The Lakers have got they're the worst defense in the NBA. So Thompson could get hot. They don't guard three-pointers. They don't guard transition. They don't guard anything. He can go there and hit five threes. Jeremy Grant was massive in the last game. Do they run with a Jeremy Grant, Nerlens Noel front court again and play Okafor off the bench? I think it's a possibility considering how well Noel, Grant, and Smith all play together.
Yeah.
But it's probably more of a tournament look at 4,500 because he could get limited and do nothing. Brandon Bassett.
Carl Landry could have 45 points. I I mean, we just don't know.
Seriously, anything could happen in this game. There's so much. Larry Nance at 4,000 is worth looking at. Again, it's an easy matchup against the Sixers. He'd been playing well, a 24.4 average in his last three, and at 4,000, you like that. You can look at using him. Robert Covington's been struggling. Probably wouldn't want to get him out there. Lou Williams, you mentioned him. He's been playing well. Brandon Bass has actually been getting run, and he put up over 20 points in the last game at 3,800. Roy Hibbert is at 4,300, and yes, he's been terrible, but if there's one team that you can put up big numbers against, it's the Sixers. Like he could go out there and put up 25 points. He's done it in his last five games. He has had a game with 25 points. Could he do it again? Yep, but we don't know how it's going to play out. As for Nerlens Noel, as you mentioned earlier, 6,300. He's averaging over 36 points in his last three. He's a great guy to get out there. The defensive numbers have come back. He's looked great in the pick and roll with Smith. He's a great guy to get out there, I reckon. Okafor, we're avoiding him.
Yeah, not a big Okafor guy. He's just not doing enough across the board to warrant that salary. There are better plays tonight, but I mean, Noel to me, I know they're a different position, but at $100 more is so much more valuable.
No, definitely. You'd have to go Noel over Okafor. But this game, look, it's going to be interesting to watch. There's a lot of, most of the guys apart from Ish Smith are probably tournament options, and just see how they go off, because there's, you're not much guaranteed. You don't know what Kobe's going to do. Hollis Thompson, the minutes are there. The production hasn't been there. Bass, Grant, Covington, D'Angelo Russell, who knows what Byron Scott's going to do with him, Clarkson. All these guys have appeal, but we don't know. There's no set pattern of how it's going to all play out. So you could get a lot of value in tournaments, and I imagine the winning tournament lines will have a lot of players from this game. Picking which one it is the challenge, and it requires a little bit of a look. But I think there's quite a few guys in here that that do have appeal. Anything else you want to add from this one, Seth?
No, not really. I'm personally not a fan of the shorter slates, so especially ones like tonight where there aren't, you know, you don't have a lot of the big name guys, but certainly some fun games to watch. And my Knicks will be going up against the Bulls, my rejuvenated Knicks, who will certainly miss the playoffs, and we have no first-round pick this year. So enjoy Porzingis.
Porzingis.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you have to enjoy
while we have him, you know?
Yeah, at least he's going to be something there for the next, hopefully 10 years or so.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. That's one of the few bright spots we've really had to enjoy in a long time. Did you remember what you were going to ask me in the beginning?
No, absolutely no idea what that was.
Were you going to ask me how much better I thought my beard was than yours?
Sure, go ahead. Give me the answer.
It's much better.
Cool. I'm going to put up a Twitter poll, and we'll see how the respondents come in. Who's a better beard, Seth or me? We'll see how that goes. I'll put that poll out on Twitter, and we'll go from there. Before we go, Seth, I'm just going to put up my DFS plays of the day. And the way I do this is a guy that's look for each position, a guy that's under 5,000, a guy that's between 5 and 7.5, and a guy that's 7,500 over. At point guard, Jose Calderon's got some upside at 41. Ish Smith at 5,800, one of the better plays of the day. And John Wall is a good high-priced point guard if you're looking in that direction at 10,200. Terrence Ross, at shooting guard, 4,000. Kobe at 6,900 has got some upside, and Jimmy Butler at 83. Hollis Thompson, 3,500. Chandler Parsons, 52. And Mallow at 8,600. Power forwards, Jeremy Grant, 4,500, assuming we hear that Okafor's coming off the bench. Taj Gibson, 5,000. And Pau Gasol, 87. And at center, Robin Lopez, 4,100. Hassan Whiteside, 75. And Nick Vucevic at 8,200. Seth, it's been great having you back on the show. Thank you for making the time on New Year's Eve as we ring in the new year together, celebrating. Remind everyone, where can they find your work? Where can they find you on Twitter? All that sort of stuff. Plug away.
Well, first off, thanks for having me again. It's been a little bit. I was in transition, had a baby, moved into a new house, but I'm ready to rock. I'm hoping to come back on the show a few more times this year. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at Seth. Da Sportsman, that's a D-A, SethDaSportsman. This is the time where you make fun of me for that.
No, I'm going to make fun of you with something else. I want you to read your Twitter handle in an Australian accent.
All right. SATHDASPRTSMAN in from Australia.
Great success.
Yeah. Success. Yeah, not sure it was really a great success, but anyway.
No, it wasn't, but you caught me on the spot.
Yeah, I know, so that's the way to do it. You gotta throw it out there.
You know that next time you do that 30-second break where you play the music and you gotta let me know and I can do a little rehearsal. We'll run over my lines.
No worries. Follow Seth. Follow me on Twitter at @redrock_beeble. Basketball Monsters account is also a great one to follow for all your DFS players at Basque Monster. Check out basketballmonster.com and hardwoodparoxysm.com as well as all the fine sites where Seth writes the Fantasy Fix and Razzball and Fantasy Draft for his DFS content. Seth, once again, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me, sir.
No problem. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.